Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz, and it's always my special treat to bring in A, my friend, B, one of my partners, and C, just an all-around good guy, Coach Mike Brown. Mike Brown from BrownInvestments.net. You got to check out his site. He is probably, in my opinion, one of the best financial guys in the industry, because the truth is he'll just tell you what he thinks. He's not looking to for medals or honors. He wants to be straight up. And Mike Brown, welcome aboard, my man.
Hi, Bubba. How are you today? Thanks for having me.
Hey, listen, you're welcome, and you're always welcome here, because you're the guy who told me Twitter was going to be good on earnings and it went up $10, and you're the guy who told me that Lululemon was going to be good, and you thought you were wrong for a minute, but you were right. You got a pretty good feel and a pretty good read on the market there, sir, and you know, I always respect your opinion, and I know that you are still looking at the oil space. And you know, I guess I want to just start out in that space, because that kind of relates to commodities and where you're from and what's going on. And, you know, we see oil kind of churning around here, and it's been really, I guess, pretty much range bound, you know, 46, 47 to, you know, 52, 55 area. What are you looking at oil? What are you thinking, and what do you see?
I see a commodity that we have to use, you know, the future, you know, the renewable energies, the future is still off on the horizon. So, you know, we've got an oversupply right now. Look for demand to pick up as the year goes on. You know, there's more and more people in the world. So at some point in time, you're going to see $70, $75 barrel oil. Whether, you know, I think you'll see 100 again at some point. But in the near term, I think you see 70, 75. So you've got a commodity that you can, that we think is going to be worth on the low end $70 a barrel that you can buy for 46, 47, 48. So I see value there. And then, you know, you look at the geopolitical things that are going on, and in the Arabs forming a coalition to combat Iran in Yemen, you know, you're starting to see a hegemon of Iran trying to spread out their dominance within the region. So you've really got, you know, a civil war within Islam between the Shias and the Sunnis, and you know, it's just a matter of time till that spills over into the price of oil. So that's where we're at with it. And, you know, we've been adding to our positions in oil. And I think anytime you get it in the mid-40s, I think is a good buying range. So I think it's an opportunity that where there's a lot of value.
So what do you say to Citigroup? And I'll give you what I said first. When they came out with their $20 call on oil, what do you say to that?
I say they must have a lot of short positions, though.
That's what I thought.
I think they were jawboning the market down at that point. One of the reasons people don't trust Wall Street, you know, my guess is that they were short oil, and we're looking for an exit point. So. Yeah, I don't see $20 barrel oil, not in this geopolitical climate. There's too much risk out there. You see the headlines every day, and why we're courting the Iranians with this administration, I have no idea. I really can't wrap my arms around that. You know, they're sponsoring the civil war in Yemen. They've caused, you know, how many Americans have they killed in Iraq? And we were pulling Iranians off the battlefield all the time. So I don't see a $20 barrel oil, not given this political climate. If Israel decides to strike Iran, which I think is a real possibility, then, you know, you're going to see a $20, $30 spike in it overnight. So I would not be short oil right here.
And what do you see? You brought up Israel, and I know we both know the stance that Obama has on Israel. What is your take on Obama's stance in Israel?
You know, I think he is looking for his watershed moment, his Reagan at the Berlin Wall, his Carter holding up Egypt and Israel, I'm sorry, Egypt and Israel's hands, and, you know, with the Middle East Accord. I think he's looking for that legacy moment, and I don't think he can see the forest for the trees. Nobody wants this deal. You know, the other powers in that region do not want the deal. Israel, obviously, unless we forget, is the lone democracy in that region. You know, we're supposed to be the backers of democracy in this country. They don't want the deal. So, why he has this stance and why they've stuck to this, I don't understand it. I think it's bad foreign policy. But they, you know, come hell or high water, and, you know, I tweeted out over the weekend, you know, there was a defection from the Iranian team, a journalist defected, and, you know, is on record as saying that, you know, basically the Obama administration are just cheerleaders for the Iranian position. So, and you got their supreme leader going on Twitter and everything else and every other social media out there saying, you know, death to America, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm at a loss why they're doing it. They're certainly not representing the best interests of this country. So.
No, I mean, you know, Israel, one of our great allies in time, and obviously a small, tiny country, but certainly wields a lot of power. I just found it interesting. And what was your opinion on the way that Obama handled the Netanyahu election, the whole Netanyahu situation? What was your take on that? I mean, I thought it was kind of ridiculous and kind of embarrassing to the American people. Forget about if you don't like the guy, forget if you don't like what he does, but, you know, even your enemies, you congratulate when they have a victory. And it took Obama, I think, 3 or 4 days to get by and actually pick up the phone and say hello and thank you and nice job. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the Obama administration spent a fair amount of money. There were political actives in Israel working against Netanyahu. So, you know, in my opinion, he's a child. We've said it before. It's amateur hour there. He didn't get the toy he wanted for Christmas. He didn't see Netanyahu defeated, so he pouted for a few days. We're going to spend the next 10 or 15 years undoing the damage that has been done across the world from their policies and their failed policies. So, or their, in my opinion, their lack of policies, their lack of vision. So,
yeah,
it's not. I was glad to see Netanyahu win. It certainly was. Yeah, it wasn't even close. You know, but if you just listen to the press here in the United States, he was going to lose. He was going to be defeated.
Right.
You know? And again, you know, the standard media, you know, are the cheerleaders for whatever. You know, they bang the drum for whatever this administration wants them to do. I don't understand it, but it is what it is. So.
Oh no, I couldn't agree with you more there. And you know, it is that same press that talks this ridiculous crap all the time. And, you know, they're the same ones that are cheerleading the markets up here and telling everybody that, well, there's nothing to worry about. We don't have to worry about lack of earnings. We don't have to worry about lack of growth. We don't have to worry about lousy jobs. Everything's going to be great. And of course, you know, you and I both know, because we both do study history a little bit, that history tells us that this is not a good way to fight a financial war or economic troubles. But we're going to come back after the break and talk more with the coach, because the man knows his stuff. Brown Investments.net, I'm telling you, check it out. He knows his stuff, and you hear you're getting right raw from him. You know, we're not preparing for this. We're just talking, and I want you to understand where he comes from, because he will spill it out to you the way that he sees it without any regard. And he's got a famous saying, which I'll tell you about later. But this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bob Horace. I'm with Mike Brown, BrownInvestments.net. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome. back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm hanging out with my man, Coach Mike Brown, browninvestments.net. So, Coach, it was nice to see you. Got three in a row over the weekend. We'll talk a little baseball first before we get back into business. Nice to see you pick up three in a row. That's a nice little start for the conference, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a series where we really needed to just hold serve, and we were able to do that, so it worked out good.
Yeah, that's great. And, of course, off to a good start, and so that's always a good thing to go. But what isn't off to a good start, and one of the things that confuses me here, Mike, is China. China's cutting their bank dividends now. China's telling us that they're not growing. China's telling us they got a lot of bad business, and they're trying to install even some more quantitative easing. What is your take on what they're doing in China?
Yeah, it's a little surprising, the action today, but based on that news, because there is no good news coming out of there. And we've talked about it before. They've got the cities, which is a real problem. I mean, somebody put the money up to build those, and I think it's the canary in the coal mine. I think it's the harbinger for trouble, and we'll just have to wait and see. But right now, even bad news is being greeted as good news. So I would probably sell this rally. I don't be very careful. I certainly wouldn't be buying into it.
Well, no, I don't see any reason to buy into it either. And look, I find myself looking around the globe, and I go, where do we think we're going to get out of this? Do we think, do the people that are setting these policies really believe that these troubles are going to magically disappear? I mean, seriously, I mean, we know that things suck. Okay. We know that if you go by inflation adjusted earnings, and I'm not talking about earnings and company, I'm talking about wage earnings, that we're basically the same spot we were in 1979. Okay, based on earnings. I mean, did they really think that these things are just going to pick up and walk away and say, okay, trouble's over, you guys, everything's good to go? I mean, what could these people that are setting these policies possibly be thinking?
Yeah, I guess from looking at what they've done, you have to assume that they're hoping at some point that they'll get some traction in inflation and be able to inflate away these issues. But it certainly hasn't worked for the last 6-7 years. So, I mean, here we are, 2015, and, we still have the same policies that we were using in 2009 to try and, stem the financial decline at that point. The wage issue is the big problem. The disposable income is not there, and that's starting to show up in the retail numbers. Obviously, lower gasoline helps the consumer on the margins, but it's not going to be the engine that's going to, help drive this economy.
Until
we start to see an uptick in the wages, I'm not real sanguine about where we're going to go long term.
But wait, the pundits on TV kept telling me that these low gas prices were going to make the economy all better, and they were going to take away the fever and make everybody all healthy again. What do you mean that these low gas prices aren't going to help us?
Well, I mean, what do you say? $10? If you fill up twice a week, you save, maybe $30 a week if you drive a gas guzzler like I do. And look at the price of gas. What is it now? $2.30 a gallon?
Well, where you live is $2.30. I pay $2.75 today.
And, when the oil originally went down to $44 a barrel, for about a week there, we had $1.70 gasoline.
Right.
Gasoline has moved up 60 cents, 33% off its low. And oil still bumping around, 46, 47, 48. So, the savings hasn't really translated to the consumer. You're saving 30, 40 bucks a month. A week.
If you drive a lot, right? I mean, first of all, you have to drive a lot. I mean, my contention on this whole thing was, look, I'm happy when I only pay $50 versus when I used to pay $100 to fill up my tank, right? But at the end of the day...
But you still filled up your tank at $100, didn't you?
Right. It didn't change what I did, but I understand all that and the savings, but in my eyes, and you would be a better judge of this based on where you live, because you're involved not only in real business, regular economy, but also you're down in middle America, farmer's country, and... they're not really making it. So what makes it even tougher to me is that okay, they've got, you know, they're saving money on their gasoline, but they're not taking that money and spending it out at the retail store. They're not buying discretionary items. They're paying their mortgage. They're paying their land lease. They're doing something because nobody's making enough money to be spending on extra goods. What do you think?
No, I agree. And you saw what you saw the reverse in that in 2007, 2008, when all of a sudden we had $140 barrel oil in the summer of 2007, and that was the tipping point for people, you know, because they couldn't make their mortgage. And that's when you saw that, you know, the housing crisis implode. But yeah, right now, you know, people are not, if they are saving, you know, a couple hundred extra bucks a month, you know, $40 a week or so, it's going to pay down the mortgage, it's going to pay down credit card debt. It's not, it's in the retail numbers. We're not seeing it translated to higher, you know, more spending at the retail stores. So the retail numbers, you know, aside of Lululemon, have not been good.
You know, well, you know. No, they haven't. And then brings me to another issue about retail, but in food retail, you know, we've seen the dramatic push down in grain prices, but we've seen an unbelievable upsurge in cattle and in meat. Now, the average guy, you know, isn't going to the store and buying a steak. I mean, we have cattle prices at all-time record highs, and, of course, there's talk that they're going to continue to go higher. What do you see in there? You got any feel on what's happening in that market?
Well, you know, a couple of years ago we saw where, you know, when grain was really high, and you also had, you know, somewhat of a drought, the drought was starting out west. You saw where they were just taking the herds and driving them to market. And you had a lot of people were out of the business, where they're taking their entire herd and bring it to market, and we had, you know, real low beef prices for a little bit, and now you're seeing the reverse of that, where we have low grain prices. There's not a lot of beef out there, so if you want a steak, you're going to pay up for it. And it's going to take several years for those herds to be rebuilt, and you know, for that price to stabilize. So I foresee higher beef prices for at least the next couple of years.
And I compare this to, you know, when we had the PED virus in the hogs a couple of years ago, when hogs could never go down, and they were going to the moon. And of course, we all know the final end result of those, that they end up getting crippled. And now hogs can't seem to find a bottom, and you know, they went from, you know, $1.40 down to, you know, 60. Okay, so yeah, again, I look at this as in one of the famous sayings here on the Bubba Show, and what I use in all my commentary is high prices will cure high prices, and especially in a commodity, because you know equities, it's a little bit more challenging. But commodities, you know, they come and go. They send the slaughter. They, you know, they have a new crop, you know, or a new herd. So I think that changes as well. And of course, the grains, you know, have seemed to have found a pretty good level of support, a pretty good bottom. Are you hearing anything out there in farm country?
Yeah, I mean, we've had two really good harvests in a row, which has helped the farmers, you know, offset the lower prices. You know, it'll be, I don't expect anything different this year. But I think you can get long grain, you know, under $4. I think, you know, that like you said, that seems to be a good price right now. I thought we might see some fallout in the farmland market, but it's not, that really has not transpired. I guess, you know, there's been enough of the corporations, et cetera, buying up the land that they've been able to, at least to this point, absorb the lower prices. So, you know, you've seen the price of farmland around here get as high as $14,000. Now it's somewhere around $10,000 an acre. So, but there has not been fallout like we had in the, you know, the early mid 80s, where, you know, you saw a lot of farms going up for auction. So that's a good thing.
I think it's a good thing, and I do know some farmers, and I know there's been some renegotiation on land leases, because obviously most farms are now being run, you know, by corporations or by groups, and you know, not many left of the individual farmer left anymore. But I know down in your neck of the woods, obviously the home of Caterpillar and you know, some of the others, that you know, it's not great because they're oversupplied and they're running out of supply space as well. But it will magically work itself out, that I'm confident. We're hanging out with Mike Brown, browninvestments.net. You got to check him out. You can hear the realness in his voice. You can hear him talking as if he were talking to you directly. And I think that's important when you're looking for an advisor to help you go to the next step. And certainly Coach Brown can help you go to the next level with your investing and give you some real solid information. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be back after the break with more from Mike Brown. Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me...
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm hanging with Mike Brown, browninvestments.net. You got to check him out. I'm telling you, this is he is the real deal, as I like to call him, and pretty good coach, too, and at one time was a pretty good ball player. Spent time in the Dodgers system, and the other day we were talking about Chavis Ravine, and so he knows his stuff. And Mike, how do you compare professional baseball to being a professional financial advisor?
In a word, it's a grind. Professional baseball, you play every day. You may have one or two days a month off, so you're playing 7 days a week. And, you know, same thing with investing. You know, it's a constant grind. The markets are open 5 days a week. And if you're like us, you're spending your Saturdays and Sundays doing your research and, you know, trying to figure out what you're going to do the following week. So they're very similar in that regard, but they're both a grind.
And when you talk about a grind, and, you know, this is something that's important, I think, for investors to understand, which is why I brought up the analogy. When you're grinding out, you know, on the baseball field, or you're grinding out as an investor, what do you have to look for? I mean, we know that every stock you pick, every trade you make is not going to be a winner, but it's not necessarily always the winners. It's really how you capitalize on the winners and take care of the losers, because at the end of the day, the winners will take care of themselves. Do you agree?
Yes. That's one of the toughest things, is to the discipline to let your winners run and to cut your losses quickly when you're on the wrong side of it. You know, that is the discipline that is the hardest. And, you know, I like you're saying, you know, let's keep our stops tight. You know, that's where most investors fall down. You know, when you're on the wrong side of it, you need to cut your losses. And then it's, you know, you got to let your winners run. You know, we all want to take profits and book profits. That certainly feels good. But sometimes you got to, you know, you're much better off. You certainly would have made a lot of money selling a Microsoft in the mid 90s. But if you let it run another 5-6 years, you made a lot more money. So,
I mean, you know, so you do look at the entire makeup of what's going on, and you make decisions based on that. But at the end, it's always about protecting the portfolio, or as I like to say, you know, you protect your business, because, you know, people forget that portfolio that you're carrying is the same as your inventory in your business, is it not?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. You know, Same thing if you're, using an analogy, if you've got a donut inventory, you don't just throw it out. You don't just let somebody come and take it out the back and let it drain down. You've got to protect that inventory, which in our business is capital. You've got to protect your capital.
And, I find it amazing. And, we as human beings, first of all, have a tendency, and you mentioned it a few minutes ago, is to always cut your wind short because, I got the profit, but we forget that we also have to take off the losses. And that is something that I think is very important and prudent. I think that's something that you watch over pretty closely, is managing that stuff. I mean, you're not churning it or over trading it, but what you're doing is you're saying, you know what? I made a mistake. This was not a great trade. We need to get rid of this and look for something else better that will give us a better return. And I think that's how you operate, is it not?
Yes, absolutely. And, and we're going to make mistakes and, this retail shop is doing well and it turns out they're not. You got to admit that mistake and move on. So that's all you need to do. That's where the discipline comes in.
And that I think is something that, I think that this country, and I mentioned this, I think in the first segment we were talking about it, and this is, I think, one of the things that we're making a big mistake in here is that we're not moving on. We're continuing to compound the same loser. And even, Ben Bernanke is now writing a blog talking about how he supports the Fed. Well, of course he's going to support the Fed. He's the one who started this ridiculous program. So, you have any thoughts to, having a guy like Bernanke talking, in the background about what's going on?
Yeah, they've continued his policy, so of course he's going to support him. At what point do we start to rein in our monetary policy? I mean, are we Japan? Do we go 25 years, before we raise rates? The people that are really being hurt right now is the Depression generation and with their savings. I've done what I was supposed to do. I lived within my means. I've saved a lot of money. And now if I want any type of return, I've got to invest in the stock market. I can't put it in, bank insured CDs because I'm going to earn literally nothing. So, they really over the last 7+ years punished the savers. Somewhere that's got to change, but there certainly doesn't seem to be any political appetite for it at this point.
No, I don't think that is any appetite. And, I think they want to continue. And, of course, this is, as I like to always compare everything to, it's, Mr. Potter from It's a Wonderful Life. And he keeps, giving up to Mr. Potter while the people that lived in Bailey Park are getting slammed. And, it's something that bothers me, which brings me to, we have earnings coming out or starting next week. Okay. And of course, they've already lowered expectations, so the bar is not set very high for them to beat earnings once again. But how far, in your mind, can you keep lowering the bar and then expect something good to happen? I find that troubling to myself. What do you think?
We've discussed this a lot. I mean, we're 41 months without a 10% correction. I mean, it's going to happen. It's going to come. And you need to be very wary of that at this point. Earnings, I think we're somewhere around $120 on the S&P. And that's going to come down. And what it does, I think, is when we're going to get the pullback that we've been looking at. And, I think the longer we go without it, the more severe it's going to be. I think we all know that. So.
I mean, these things are just, I find it troublesome because, there's a wise man once told me, figures never lie, but those who figure do something. I can never get it right. My statement is always numbers never lie, only the people that report them do, but there's a better way to say that. But, I like my way because I get kind of frustrated when I continue to see this ridiculous information or what I like to call misinformation being put out there because, we're being taught or brought in to believe that, hey, everything is okay and that it's going to be fine. And I can't see it being fine for the average guy. And what's going to happen? Now, I know your people are very well protected in the way that you invest. So your people are not as in danger. What about the amateurs, the ones who are involved with people that don't care about portfolios, that when this market, I mean, look, I'm not talking because I'm bearish. I am bearish, and I don't ever duck away from that. But we know the market's going to have a correction. We know the market's going to collapse again. I mean, that's just a mathematical certainty, nothing to do with opinion. The question is when. What's going to happen to all these poor people that, you know, are past the ability to re-earn, past the ability of being able to wait for money, that are over-invested in this market? How are they going to come through this whole thing?
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. I mean, there is a, you know, like we said, in order to earn an above inflation return, they have had to, you know, invest in the stock market. You couldn't put your money in the safety of CDs. Otherwise, you know, you were earning nothing. So, yeah, you know, that's when it's going to come. So that's going to be the real tragedy of the next collapse. And, you know, there will be a collapse. There always is. You know, it'll be the fact that, you know, people who should not have been in the market were, because that's where they were driven to, because CD, you know, interest rates were kept low for such an extended period of time.
And that, again, is something that I find to be, you know, very troubling in my in my views of the overall economy. To me, I find it upsetting because, again, the poor guy is, you know, the big guys who have benefited from this have taken their bonuses. They've gotten big money. They're making big money. But the innocent little guy out there, you know, 63 years old, 65 years old, trying to live on a pension, trying to get by and save and worked his and scrimped, as you said earlier, and saved his money. And now just wants to live the same life that he or she lived the entire time they were saving for it. And unfortunately, they end up taking a lot of part-time jobs because they're not making enough. And I think, to me, that becomes a problem as well. But we're going to talk more about that when we come on the break. But I'm going to ask you now, do you think, and I want to get the answer after the break, do you think that the biotech space is in a bubble? Is it becoming, have we gotten past the point of real earnings matching these things? Are we getting too overexcited? So the question will be, when we come back from the break, is the biotech space in a bubble? This is the Bubba Show. I am with my man, Coach Mike Brown of BrownInvestments.net. Again, I urge everybody to check him out. And you can also check him out because he is a key contributor to the Bubba Report. He is one of our writers about the finances and how to protect and how to take care of your own personal finances, because I think it's important that everybody have somebody that they can turn to say, hey, this is what I have. These are my goals and objectives. How do I reach those goals and objectives? And I don't think you'll get a better answer from anybody but my man, Mike Brown, a realist, lives in the Midwest, lives in farming country, has views from all sides of the world. And I think it's important that when you get a view from what you're trying to do, you get it from somebody who really is living just like you are, because at the end of the day, we're all in the same boat and we all need a better way to go. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop out here for a break. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org, and we'll be right back with Mike Brown after the break from BrownInvestments.net. Month of Sunday Night Calls. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with Coach Mike Brown and BrownInvestments.net. So, Mike, I asked you before we went to break, is biotech in a bubble?
It sure feels like it. I think, without question, there's going to be some huge winners in that space as the technology continues to improve and, you know, we find better and better ways to combat, you know, illnesses, whether it be cancer, et cetera. But it's definitely where the hot money is at right now. So if you're gonna play in that sector, you better have a very you better know what you're buying and why you're buying it. You know, what is the end market for that particular company? How big is that end market? You know, is it something that, you know, is it a 100 million application? Is it a 5 billion application? You know, depending on what they're coming up, whether it be on the pharmaceutical side or on a, you know, a cancer treatment, et cetera. So I would be very careful there right now. I do think it's certainly very frothy if not a bubble. So.
It was really frothy when I used to own Biogen at 50, and it's 400 and something now. So I'm kind of.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly been some huge winners, and that's something that. And there's going to be some big winners there. Am I smart enough to pick which ones? No, probably not. I think if you're going to play in that sector again, you need to have a long-term view, and I would probably go with an ETF that owns a basket of them, as opposed to, you know, trying to pick an individual one.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I think that's probably a fairly intelligent way to look at it as well. Now, something that really has got my goat, and I want to hear it from your side because you're more the retail side. Yeah, I'm the trader side. Friday, the government is going to release the jobs number into a market that is going to be closed, and to me, that burns my ass that they're going to take possibly one of the biggest numbers of the year and release it into a market that is closed. And I want to know what your thoughts of that are, if you have any.
If I was from a trader standpoint, I would be neutral that, because you're going to have 3 days of them kicking that number around before the markets can acclimate to it. So, yeah, I don't agree. Why not just release it on Thursday? They already have the number. They have it right now. Release it on Thursday, let the market digest it, and then we can all go into our Easter weekend. But, they are going to release it Good Friday, and we will be closed. So from a long-term viewpoint, you know, it's a non-event. But from a trader standpoint, it could be very volatile in either direction.
Well, but don't you think even from an investor standpoint, I mean, I'm assuming, I'm going to make a certain assumption. Since we both know they have the number already, right? I'm going to assume the number is going to be very good, okay? Because if it was going to be very bad, I think there's no way they release it into a closed market, because if it's bad and they release it into a closed market, that gives people 3 days to fester and go, man, I got to get out, sell, and they could just cripple the market. I mean, this could be the report. If they're going to release a report that is going to be interpreted as bad for the market, this could be a report that actually start, you know, the markets, in my opinion, are waiting for an event to go down, okay? They're searching for a reason, and until they get a reason, they're going to continue to hang up here, stay in this consolidation range, stay near the upper end of the most recent trades, but if this number turns out to be bad, this could be the reason that the market does finally have that 10% correction. What do you think?
Yes. Yeah, it certainly could be, but I agree with you that if it was bad, they would pre-release it. So, there, you know, and again, you know, statistics can paint any picture you want them to. But my feeling is that they will cook the books on this, and it will be a good number. But, yeah, I mean, we certainly are looking for a reason to go down. And until we get that reason, it's just going to continue to consolidate around this 18,000 number on the Dow. So.
And I agree with that. I mean, I, again, there's a lot of things that bother me. That's one. But of course, you know, why shouldn't I be bothered by our ridiculous system that I'm already unhappy with to begin with? Because, you know, we're sitting now with a sitting president who has become probably the most antagonistic president that I can remember. Now, I'm not that old. I'm almost 60, but. I never remember one who quite so antagonistic towards everybody and basically says, if you don't like it, I'm taking my bat and ball and going home. And I don't, you know, that's not a very good way to run a country. What do you think?
No. I think they were fabulous campaigners and poor governors. So why that should surprise anybody when, you know, never held a, you know, a position of leadership prior to, you know, running for the Senate, he was there for a cup of coffee and then turned around and ran for president. And, you know, somehow we elected him twice. I don't,
well,
you know, we're going to look back on this, you know, over a cocktail, 5 years from now, like, how the hell did we survive 8 years of that?
Well, but, it's amazing.
You know, it's a strong country with a good foundation. So, we will survive him. We don't have to like it along the way, but we will survive it.
Yes, there is no place like it, and certainly you and I can both agree on that, that this is the best place to be. And, of course, we've been through bad presidents before, and this is just another one in the chain. It's just, to me, it's like he was trying to clone his own Democratic Party by increasing entitlements and really sticking it to the middle class and moving everything down a level so that the entitled could continue to vote for the Democratic Party. And I think that, you know, a little bit of a sad story and a little sad state of manipulation. But, you know, I have one other, you know, I always have a lot of things to bitch about, right? I mean, I have a special segment on one of my calls, which is Bubba's Bitch. And I'm unhappy that Janet Yellen came out at 3:45 Eastern on a Friday and started talking. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that? I don't understand. Again, I don't understand how they pick 15 minutes before the market's closing for the weekend, you have the Fed chair speaking. Do you have any thought about that? Or do you?
No, yeah, that was interesting. You know, it's not like these aren't smart people. I mean, they understand the impact they have and everything else. So why they chose that? I didn't understand it. It certainly was a very interesting choice, but I don't know what their reasoning or logic would have been. So,
I guess the question is, do you think they knew what their logic was?
I would like to hear it. I would like to see someone articulate that. Because to me, it didn't make a lot of sense. So, we would like to think that there was some forethought in there, but quite possibly there wasn't. So, you know, again, it seems to be amateur hour a lot of the time there. So, why they would do that? I would love to hear them articulate that.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand. I mean, I asked the question the other night on my call, and I said, "Has the Fed learned anything from what they've done?" And from my point of view, they have learned nothing because they continue to make the same mistake over and over again. I think that was Albert Einstein who said, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And I don't think we've gotten a different result. I think we're getting the same result, and all we're doing is prolonging the tragedy that's probably sometime near. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the further we push this off into the future, the worse it's going to be. And one of the things that you know, over the last crashes we've had in the last 30 years, you had a segment of the population which had a guaranteed income with their pension. And you look at now, the majority of people, their retirement savings is not going to come in the form of a pension. It's going to come from a 401k, which is heavily invested in the stock market. So that is going to compound the pain when we do get these crashes, is you're going to have people who are retired, and you get a 30% pullback, which we know happens with, you know, a fair amount of, you know, you're going to have one every 10 years or so, and you get a situation like, you know, the period from 2007 to 2009, where you've got a 45% pullback in the overall markets, and I've got, you know, 100% of my money invested in those markets, and my retirement portfolio just got cut in half. You know, that's going to be a dramatic impact on people in the future, because, you know, their retirement well-being is tied up in the stock market.
And that ain't good, but who is good is browninvestment.net. Make sure you check it out. Mike Brown, I appreciate you spending the day with me. It's been a great, I had a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed what you had to say.
Oh, thank you for having me. I always appreciate it. So.
This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. I had my man Mike Brown. The baseball team's on a roll. Mike Brown's on a roll. What could be better than that? We'll see you all tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.